This is Bob Enyart inviting you to our second Friday meeting on June 8th to hear scientists from the Creation Research Society speak at our Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting, Friday, June 8th at 7 p.m. And if you'd like a visiting scientist to speak at your church on Sunday, June 10th, please contact the Creation Research Society. For our Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting, Friday, June 8th at 7 p.m. And if you'd like a visiting scientist to speak at your church on Sunday, June 10th, please contact the Creation Research Society. For more about our Friday night, June 8th meeting, which is at the Bethlehem Lutheran Church at Wadsworth and 21st, please just go to kgov.com, that's kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
I thought you were a caveman engineer.
Caveman engineer. Rocks, millions of years old.
That was fun. Fred, we got the disguises at Lakewood, and we went to Red Rocks, and it was really fun.
Yeah, it was fun, and I think you got the YouTube up on the website, right?
That's right, at so realsciencefriday.com.
Yep.
That was all great fun, and such amazing news about Neanderthal being totally modern human, basically, closer to us than two chimps are to one another.
Exactly. So
that's powerful.
Yeah, Neanderthals aren't cavemen. They're humans
people.
That lived in caves and outside caves,
right.
Just like people do today.
Just a few thousand years ago.
Yeah.
They're like an ethnic group that died off. So, Fred, could we talk about, we talked about Neanderthal.
Okay.
Last. Could we talk about babies?
Babies, from Neanderthal to babies.
Yeah, little babies.
So you're talking about the Goldilocks effect?
Oh, I just love this story, and it dovetails with reports we've done in the past. But what is the Goldilocks effect?
Well, this comes from the Public Library of Science 1 journal.
That's a peer-reviewed scientific journal.
That's right, and they did this study on babies, right, about mm-hmm. what their attention was to different effects, like complex situations versus surprises,
yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah, at the University of Rochester. And what they wanted to figure out is babies need to learn a lot of information. They have to be like a sponge, learn language and physics and everything. They studied children by looking at like their eye movement and all, because they're too little to speak. And they found out that they zero in on things that are not too complex and not too simple.
That's right. Kind of in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Kind of more of the fun stuff.
Yeah, like Goldilocks. Not too hot, not too cold, but this porridge is just right. So they filter out the things that either will not help them learn more or the things that they can't possibly comprehend, and they zone in right on what they need to be understanding and experiencing.
So did that just happen with babies? I think we do that today, right, Bob?
Yeah. It is so awesome how God made us. And Fred, you remember the study at Yale University?
Oh, yeah. It's babies. They know math and physics and all that stuff right out of the chute, right?
How is it possible that a baby could have an understanding of physics, but they do? Do you remember what was the little scientific experiment that they did? Totally baby safe.
And it's not just that, though. The morality stuff, too, right? They knew right from wrong.
Yeah.
Interesting. We talk about that. But
how did they do that? What were they
doing?
Well,
then they put, like, building blocks stacked on top of each other. Yeah. And it was kind of a magician trick where they take one underneath and they wouldn't go crumbling down.
Right.
It was a gimmick, but the babies don't see the trick behind the magician's sleight of hand.
So the baby is seeing blocks piled up, and if you remove the bottom one, they should fall down. They would do that, and when they removed, say, the top one, the baby's like, well, big deal. You just took off a block.
Yeah.
But when they removed the bottom block and the blocks didn't fall down, the baby's staring at it like, okay,
like,
guys.
What's the catch?
What's going on? Where's the man behind the curtain?
Yeah.
And they did the same thing with math. They had puppet shows where somebody would get a ball, and then they get another ball, and they had three balls. And the babies recognized, hey, that doesn't add up. Where'd that third ball come from? And then a puppet show where a bad puppet took away like a prize from a good puppet, and the babies knew that that was wrong.
Did the bad puppet, like, have a mean-looking mustache, the curly one?
Must
and
have.
Black cape?
Yes. Dressed like a caveman.
Yeah.
Now, this Goldilocks effect is another indication of God's brilliance and his loving care for human beings, little boys, little girls, when they're born, how he made them to learn. He made them to communicate.
Yeah, to be able to take in all this information. And you have to have information to be able to take in this information.
Yeah.
So where did all this programming come together? Really, their soul and their spirit in, yeah, in these experiments, you see all of those features.
That's right. So if there were no God and you have babies born that have to be able to comprehend their environment to survive, well, how's it going to happen? And if it doesn't happen with the first babies that are born, then you're not going to get another chance. They're all going to be dead.
Yeah, they're going to be extinct.
So evolution, if that were the mechanism for life on Earth, then everything would have been extinct about a million times over for reason after reason after reason. And it's so interesting. Now, maybe we could jump to another topic, because this is about whales. We go from cavemen to babies to now the largest animals on Earth, whales.
Yeah, whales. They got a big mouth, don't they?
They do.
They got a really big mouth.
Yeah. In fact, how much food? They take in a lot of water. These baleen whales that open their jaws, they call it lunge feeding. They go through the water, and how much food do they eat in one scoop?
22 pounds.
22 pounds? That's a big meal. It's not even a meal, is it? It's barely.
It's like 6 seconds worth.
They can do it in 6 seconds.
Now, I have seen some humans do this, but...
Oh, no. I sure hope you haven't. So they do this, and within as little as 6 seconds, they take in 80 cubic yards of water that weighs more than they do, and they filter out 22 pounds of food, mostly krill and little tiny fish, and they are huge creatures.
Okay, so Bob, I know that whales supposedly evolved from wolves, right?
Or, yeah.
Or like these terrestrial-like wolves.
I've seen it on your website, evolutionfairytale.com. You have the evolution show, and there's a wolf going out into the surf. It starts swimming, and it becomes a whale.
A whale over time. Yeah, it finally figures it out. Yeah. So how does this whale with the big mouth, I'm curious, did wolves start off with a big mouth?
Well, this is the story. This is what they claim, and folks could read about it. It's in the news right now. It's at the LA Times, and it's in the science news. It turns out that scientists looking at whales that were killed up in Iceland by their fishermen, their country allows them to harvest so many whales per year. So the scientists found an organ they never knew existed, Fred, and it's between two of the lower jaw bones, a brand new organ. Well, it's been there all along, but they had never noticed it. And what it is, it's this tissue that's suspended in a gel-like material, and they believe that it's a sensory organ, and it's sending information to the whale's brain about where his jaws are out, like how widely his mouth is opened. And he has to open and close his mouth rapidly, so he has to be very aware of what's going on. And they said this organ is what's doing that.
Yeah, and they say this organ is perfectly placed. Boy, it's amazing how evolution always perfectly places things. Huh?
Perfectly. They say, yeah, and that's fun to see what these scientists are saying, that this odd arrangement of tissues, I don't know why they'd call it an odd arrangement. It's perfect, but it's odd. Didn't make much sense to us at first, but then we realized that this organ was perfectly placed anatomically to coordinate a lunge. And because the soft structure is pinched by tips of the jaws. So, Fred, we see this with evolutionists. Like human beings, we have a tendon in our leg, and evolutionists have said, well, that's probably leftover, like your tailbone, like your appendix, your tonsils. They've been wrong time after time after time.
Yeah, and we'll pay for the surgery to have those parts removed. If, right. You know, they want to have that test done.
Yeah, if Aaron Ra wants to have his tailbone removed, I will pay to have it removed because it's just a leftover.
It's just leftover.
The fact that you have muscles anchored to it, oh, that's beside the point.
So now we're talking about a sensory tendon.
Well, it seems like it, because your brain needs to know. You need to know where your legs are and whether they're extended or not. An evolutionary anatomist will look at this tendon and say, well, look, it's short. There's this big old muscle that manipulates the movement for the leg. This tendon is just left over. It's not really needed. After that criticism was leveled, others have looked at this and said, you know what? This is a tremendous aid in a sensory way. It's giving feedback to your brain to tell your brain where your leg is at and how much it's extended, because the big muscle doesn't have to stretch all that much because it's so big. But this shorter tendon really changes its length as you move your leg, and that provides very accurate feedback. So time after time after time, they say, well, look at this. Remember the fin?
Yeah, fin on the fish, and they snipped it off.
They snipped off millions of those poor fish. They snip off that adipose fin on the back, on the top of the fish. And they say, this is just left over from evolution. Remember we did the story?
Yeah, we talked about that, and it actually had some sensory value, right?
Yeah, the fish that had that fin were able to survive better than the fish without it, and they've been snipping them by the millions for years.
A big shock, huh, that it actually had a function.
Yeah, it's arrogance before the creator, thinking that we know better than him, and it's ignorance. And I think about how superficial these stories are, Fred. The spin on this whale organ is that now we know how the whales evolved so big.
Yeah, how they got really big.
We figured it out. Because there's this organ in its jaw that tells it when its mouth is opened.
It's like, and it's got a really big mouth, so.
Yeah. I mean, is that what you need to become the largest creature on Earth? You have to know when your mouth is open? I mean,
it's
helps.
It's not storytelling. It's not science.
It reminds me, it'd be like saying, well, we figured out how the giraffe became the tallest animal on land. It's because it got a long neck.
It has a long neck, so it's the tallest animal.
Right. It's like...
Well, the giraffe, that's a lot of fun, isn't it? I remember on your TV show in the late 90s, this is where I got that idea for my website, right? Mm-hmm. With the exploding giraffe head. You've seen that,
yeah.
Right?
You got that beautiful artwork. Where did you get all that artwork for your evolution fairy tale?
Well, my brother did all that work. Oh. Yeah, definitely wasn't
me.
He's
a good artist.
Yeah, he's a good artist. So I've got this picture of well, you have to go to the website, but there's a warning right before it, cranial explosion.
Right.
And basically the point behind it is the giraffe, it has a really long neck, and you know, the giraffe has to pump blood. It has a really big heart to pump that blood up through the neck.
Right.
You know, fluid mechanics, it's pretty hard to pump.
Blood. Blood is thicker than water.
Yeah, and pump it against gravity, right?
Yeah, so if you were pumping water 10 feet up, you'd need a strong pump. The giraffe's heart is about 2.5 feet long. It is this powerful muscle to get the blood all the way up his neck to his brain.
That's right. But what happens when he goes down to get a drink of water?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's a problem, right? Because if you're pumping that much fluid with that kind of pressure, and you suddenly go down to get a drink of water, your head's going to explode.
It would explode.
Yeah.
So the giraffe doesn't explode. His head doesn't blow up like you illustrate, your brother does so graphically on your disgusting website. Really gross. But could we put a photo of that on our Real Science
Friday? Oh, absolutely.
Friday?
Yeah.
Oh,
let's
thank
put
you.
That there for the show summary.
A picture of it. Okay, we'll do that. So the giraffe, it turns out, has a valve at the base of his head.
Yeah, a series of valves, actually, in his neck.
A series. And what happens when he bends over to drink?
So when he bends over to drink, those valves close so that blood doesn't go pumping into his head. Now, his head has a reservoir of blood. You know, his brain has a
There's a reservoir at the base of his brain.
Essentially, yeah. So he can be down there and get a drink of water for some period of time without passing out, because you need blood in your head.
Wow. And then he stands up, and again, he could pass out if it wasn't for that reservoir and for the beautifully timed valves opening
as
he's standing up.
Yeah. So how did that evolve? Seems like we should find a lot of half-necked giraffes in the fossil record with half of
their
neck shredded.
With their skulls blown up next to watering holes. Yeah, we should find that everywhere.
Yeah. And the legs have really very strong mechanism to prevent the blood from going through their feet. So just the tendons are really thick.
It's not just you need to know if your mouth is open, and if you do, you could become the biggest animal in the world. Your whole body has to scale to get bigger. your skeleton and your circulatory system, your heart, it all has to work together. It is so juvenile, so superficial to say, oh, we think we figured out how the whale got so big. He knows when his mouth is opened.
Well, it's amazing. They tell these stories. I think they hear them so much that these things just become secondhand to them, and they don't realize how silly it is, the claims they're making.
Yeah.
I mean, stick to the science. This stuff about it's big because it had a big mouth.
Hmm.
That's why whales are big.
Yeah, it seems backwards.
Yeah.
So from cavemen to babies to whales and giraffes, Fred, how about clams? This certain kind of clam, it's just amazing.
Well,
a razor
clam. Yeah, it creates quicksand. You know that stuff you can get into and you sink to the bottom? And
only on Lost in Space.
Or Gilligan's Island. I saw it on there once.
Gilligan's Island, Wild Wild West. During the 1960s,
there was quicksand
every
there.
TV show had a scene in it where somebody sunk in quicksand.
Yeah.
I was a little kid. I thought the whole world was covered in quicksand.
I did, too. I thought that for a long time. Hey, quicksand's dangerous. You got to watch out for it.
Yeah, but really, it
really
doesn't.
It's a Hollywood thing, right?
It's a Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, razor clams, they like to seek shelter beneath the floor of the sea, but they don't have the muscle power to even get about an inch below the bottom of the sea. They can't get down there. But somehow, how deep do they go about?
About 2 feet.
What?
So how do they go 2 feet?
How can they get 2 feet
We're talking
down?
About a really small little clam, right?
Yeah. How do they get 2 feet below the floor of the sea if they don't have enough power even to get down an inch or two? How do they do it?
Well, Bob, there's a special way they burrow.
They do. They're really experts at fluid dynamics.
Yeah. In fact, engineers are looking at their mechanism to figure out how to bury things. You know, I think
like
the military is looking into it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it turns out that these clams, God made them with the ability at just the right moment, Fred, they contract their shell, they close it a bit, and they pull water down around them, and the water forms a bead around their clam shell where it's slightly opened, and as they change the size of that, they pull the water down with them, and the sediments around them become suspended in this water, and they just constantly sink all the way down till they get 2 feet under.
And they just keep repeating that process.
It is.
Wow, 2 feet.
An amazing thing. Now, the article didn't go on to say, and I'm not a marine clam expert, I don't know what they do once they get down there. I sure hope God told them how to get up. But I guess,
you know, maybe there's some nutrients down there, but our guess is it's probably for protection. I mean, we know that animals all across the globe have protection mechanisms.
Oh,
it wouldn't surprise me a bit. I got this jawfish that's really cool in my aquarium that it, you know, burrows underneath and just sticks its head out.
Mm.
And then whenever it sees food, it kind of waits. And then zoom, it goes up, grabs it, and goes
grabs
right back
food
in its hole.
And hides again.
Yeah.
It's a defense mechanism. And there are so many defense mechanisms throughout the ecosystem, plants and animals. Fred, we know that they will hide. They'll be camouflaged like an octopus or a cuttlefish. They'll flee. They'll spray like a bombardier beetle or skunk odor or venom. They have countermeasures.
Yeah, countermeasures. Like, you know, the military, like Air Force One has countermeasures, you know.
Oh, yeah.
According to this movie I saw.
In case a rocket shoots at it.
Yeah.
Try to distract the rocket.
The Hunt for Red October. Did you see that movie?
No,
so
but
it
go
shoots
ahead.
Out these little countermeasure things so that this torpedo goes for the countermeasures and misses the submarine.
Oh.
Well, there's a
one
shrimp.
Of our boys did radar on a nuclear sub for years in the Navy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
We're very proud of him.
So there's a shrimp that lets out this chemical substance that has luminescence to it. It has light to it.
Bioluminescence.
Yeah, and so the fish goes for that, the countermeasure, instead of the shrimp, and the shrimp just scurries off. That's amazing.
That is just so cool. In fact, we need to do a show just on bioluminescence.
Yeah, in the deep.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
Because it's astounding. It's
amazing, the
how God made
there.
All these creatures. So many of them have the ability to make light, and they make light in all different kinds of ways.
Yeah, where there's a lot of light, you don't have very many things to give off light. You know, you got the firefly and a few other things, but
yeah.
Boy, in the deep ocean, all kinds of light given off. It's awesome. Some fish have like three different colored lights, you know, headlights that are three different colors depending on what prey they're after or whatnot.
It's all amazing. So amazing. There are these defense mechanisms. The way God designed the ecosystem for before the fall and the global flood and after the fall and the flood, because before the fall it was a paradise. Afterward, we would see genetic breakdown and predation, and there would be starvation and animals dying of thirst, They would become very aggressive toward one another. So God had to be the most brilliant engineer conceivable to make millions of species that could work together in some kind of symbiotic way to survive so that everything didn't go extinct rapidly.
Well, I like your hypothesis that I hadn't heard before until I think a year ago about why babies come out, you know, typically average 9 months, human babies.
Yeah.
That before the fall, it may have been a lot shorter.
Yeah, I think it was 6 months before the fall, I believe, because God said when Adam and Eve sinned to Eve, because you have done this, therefore you shall have pain in childbirth. And he multiplied her gestation, I believe is what's being said.
And that
said.
Makes a lot of sense.
Isn't
so,
that neat?
Yeah, let's say it was 6 months instead of nine. What would be the advantage of making it 9 months?
Well,
obviously it's the pain. That...
Right. The woman suffers more pain because the baby's so much bigger, but because the baby's bigger, he could survive better in an increasingly hostile environment.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer the paradise. So there would not have been pain in childbirth the way God originally created us. Not only does an adult organism need to have defense mechanisms, but somehow they have to be able to protect their offspring. So whether they're going to hide their eggs or carry their young after they're born, or whether they're going to have so many eggs that just the math of it, some are going to survive. It seems like there are thousands of defense mechanisms, specific survival mechanisms that enable millions of species to coexist in the world.
That's right. And you can't explain it with evolution and natural selection. Too many examples.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
It's like trying to explain the space station by using a child's Tinker Toy set. Say, well, how did we get that up there? Well, this is what we used. We did it with this.
It's like trying to explain it with an organ that makes a whale's jaw move.
Right. Yeah, it's very much like that. All right, so Fred, it turns out that we evolved not from Neanderthal, not from Lucy, but from an eel.
An eel.
An eel.
Wow.
Out
a Monterey eel? A moray eel?
I almost got eaten alive by a moray eel.
I think
eel.
I heard about that once,
yeah.
Right? You were what, scuba, or were you snorkeling or something?
I was snorkeling off of the coast of Oahu and scared to death by a moray eel.
Wow.
Because when they get you and they grab your hand, say, or your face, I mean, that's horrifying.
They
get
down.
Your hand, they don't let go. You and the eel go to the emergency room, and that's where they take the eel off. I mean, it's a scary thing out there in Honolulu.
Yeah, and they survive outside of water for a little while because a friend of mine had an eel that got out of his tank.
Yeah.
And made it all the way to his back door. And from his fish tank to the back door, it was a long way.
Oh, brother. So anyway, this eel, we are told by Science Daily and other scientists, of course, as usual, that this eel has a spine, like a backbone, spinal column, very much like us. Like a human-like spine. So, Fred, evolutionists, they say when you find like an octopus has the same kind of an eye as a human does, so different from all other fish and insects and all, and they say, well, it's convergence.
Yeah. When you hear the word convergent evolution, that means they can't explain why this thing happened,
right?
Because then it has to happen down independent paths. And what are the odds of this happening
the wild,
separately?
Wild, wild, wild. Everything.
Such a complex mechanism.
Everything that has to happen in evolution is like one chance out of a quadrillion, trillion, quintillion, septillion, decillion.
And then have it happen again
and it
elsewhere.
Happens over and over and over and over.
You hear that word a lot from evolutionists. It's
yeah.
so embarrassing to have to use the word convergent, yet they use it all the time.
Yeah.
How many different eyes have they said converge?
About 40 different
40,
eyes.
You're right.
And how many different ways has bioluminescence evolved? About 40 times, 40 times different. I mean, everything is 40. What's with that? But if you wanted to get, say, the first enzyme, and that's so complicated, if you had every atom in the universe, you turned it into a little laboratory trying a different combination of amino acids once per second for 15 billion years, and you added another billion universes, after all that time with billions of universes, you might get like one protein or one enzyme, one, and you'd just have a dead protein. I mean, big deal.
It wouldn't be folded right or nothing.
You'd have a dead protein. When they claim that these wildly unlikely things happen everywhere, all the time. Every time you turn
amazing.
Around, here it is. So here's an eel with a spinal column like a human being.
And, you know, we're not talking just a small, simple protein that maybe got lucky and did fold right or whatever. This is a very complex organ, just like the eye. Very complex.
Yeah, we did a Real Science Friday show a while back in 2010. I got to interview a chiropractor, Fred, who's on the governor's chiropractic board for the state of Colorado, Dr. John Hanks. And we talked about what would it be like for a species if its backbone was evolving. What would that be like? And say your backbone is about 96% of the way there. You know, fluid is leaking out here and there. And he said, well, the whole population would be prostrate. They'd be laying in torment, writhing on the ground.
Well, he'd be a great job to have at that point, right?
Yeah.
He'd never go out of business.
He'd be a multimillionaire. Caveman chiropractor. It would be a disaster because a species couldn't surviving a backbone. And how do you go from invertebrate to vertebrate? That's like creatures with no backbone to creatures with backbone. We should have about a billion transitional stages.
Yeah, and yet the event between invertebrate to vertebrate is now like shrunk down to a million years. It used to be like 100 million years, right?
Right.
The
they keep
record.
Finding. Evolution find, keeps getting squeezed.
Well, they find vertebrates in the Precambrian. They're not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So where's this big time gap between invertebrates
right.
and vertebrates?
Right. It's all, really, it's magic.
Well, and evolution's been disproven. I mean, there's so much evidence against it. It's disproven. It's falsified.
It's been falsified many, many ways, including that there's not enough time. Just see our list of not-so-old things online. So, Fred, we did not evolve from an eel. Our eyes didn't evolve from octopus eyes. We have 70% the same genes as a sponge has. That was a surprise. Huge chunk of the human genome in the kangaroo. I mean, everywhere you look, it baffles the evolutionists.
I think these have all been a real backbreakers for evolution.
I think so. But it turns out that God, the creator, used a genetic blueprint like a toolbox. And from it, he said, you know, I'll use this genetic toolbox, and I'm going to make a roundworm, C. elegans.
And then a square worm and a triangle worm.
Well, he could if he wanted to. And he said, I'm going to make from this a Y chromosome from a chimpanzee. I'm going to do this and that. So we find, for example, in a sponge, the genes you need for muscles and nerves. A sponge doesn't have those things. They supposedly evolved many, many, many millions of years later, but there they are. Because they were in the library, the genetic library, just like software engineers do, that God used to make a sponge.
And how much do we share with sponges again?
70% of
70%.
Our genes. Not of the whole genome, but of our genes.
Genes, yes.
A little worm has almost as many genes as a human being does. A simple worm.
So why don't they show in the textbooks a sponge maybe turning into SpongeBob? Wouldn't that be the evolutionary sequence?
That's good. Instead of an ape, right?
Yeah.
Or a banana or a kangaroo or all of them at once. Now we have the eel and the octopus.
There you go.
So the evolutionary story is silly. By the way, if you go to our website, realsciencefriday.com/genomes, you could see what Fred and I just been talking about in the last few minutes. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thanks, Bob.
And I like that club you brought into the studio today.
You caveman.
Caveman Fred. Hey, God bless you. Check it out, Real Science Friday. And come on out June 8th, Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. We have a brand new creation DVD that I think you'll love. In fact, let me quote our board operator, Russ Holmes. Russ said this about Programming of Life. He said, this is the video that I've been waiting 20 years to see. Boy, is Russ right. This is a fabulous creation DVD about the life of the cell, what happens inside the cell, the majesty of God. Just check out realsciencefriday.com. Click on the store.